You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, DJ Preach, and the one and only OJ McDuffie. Juice, how you feeling today?
What's up, Big Seth?
Man, I'm excited. We're coming out of a bye week. We're about to see some games again. But we're gonna dial it back today. We're throwing it back to one of the all-time great Dolphins.
That's right.
And could not be more excited to have AJ Duay in the house. AJ, welcome to the tank, man.
Good morning. Good morning. So there's one all-time great OJ McDuffie.
Yes, sir.
There's three great all-time AJ Duays.
There's three.
My dad, me, and my son. So I got to give us all the props.
I love it. That's awesome. You know, and I'm glad you just said it, Duay. I have to ask you this before we get into all the questions that we did put on the board. You know, as a kid, I heard it Duay. I heard it Duay. I think I probably said Duay more than I did until I heard you say your own name one time and realized I'd been messing it up all this time. So can we set the record straight here in the tank that it's pronounce it correctly? Is it Duay?
Yeah, well, Duay is the correct pronunciation. But, you know, when someone says Duay, or duh, like my boy Bo called me at first when he said he first saw my name. I mean, you know, it's all good, you know. Just don't call me anything bad, that's all.
That's right.
All right.
And, of course, Bo, you know, Bo's going to be that guy, you know, that's going to, you know, duh, you know. That's his Bo all day right there, right?
Yeah, how long did he ride that out?
He still cracks on it once in a while. You know, he just, you know, he brings up, you know, we all got memories to bring up, you know. Sometimes we do it in private and occasionally we let it out to the public, you know, so
love it. Well, that's fun with it here in the tank. We definitely love to pull the curtain back, so we'll have some fun today for sure. So listen, we're going to talk about your Dolphins career. It's why we're here. But before we do, I'd like to hear a little bit about where you grew up, right? I think that, you know, most fans know you're from Louisiana. If you jump on Wikipedia, it says New Orleans. But I want to know about Reserve, Louisiana. Tell us about Reserve, what life was like in Reserve. And from what we hear, you've got some interesting relatives back home.
You know, it's kind of amazing that you bring this up because a buddy of mine that I went to college with, you know, sent me a pretty kind of meaningful video of, you know, of my hometown where I grew up. And it all deals with what's going on today in our society. I'll kind of get to that as, you know, we kind of end the story. But, you know, Reserve was a small little town along the Mississippi River. And I went to a school called Leon Gottschall. Okay. So that, like Gottschall from, you know, on the
like
Dolphins.
Like Devon Gottschall. Yeah.
When he first came to the team, man, I said, when I saw him one day at one of the walkthroughs or at a practice session, I said, you got to set these people right now, you know, because you're going to be Gottschall, you know. So he said awesome. It right away. He fixed it in his rookie season. For me, I waited a few years before I felt like, you know, these people got to know who in the hell I really am, you know, as my name. So, but getting up, it was a small little town on the river, kind of right now it's kind of known for what they call Cancer Alley. I mean, I don't know if you guys have understood much about the Mississippi River from New Orleans to Baton Rouge. Back in the day was nothing but plantations and just lots of just land, you know, and as time went on, a guy by the name of Leon Gottschall was, you know, kind of coming through the river, and he found this big parcel of land, and he told the plantation owner, you know, reserve this for me. I will come back and buy it. So that's kind of happened maybe in the 1700s or something to that effect. You know, whenever, you know, people were moving up and down the river, peddling their goods. I'm trying to think of the name they used for those people who were like salesmen on the road, but there was a name for it. They called it back in that time.
Like a trader.
But, you know, a small town, you know, and really, when I look back at it, you know, we were a kind of a town that was pretty much, you know, in terms of like the makeup of society, we were pretty much about a 60-40, you know, white to black. You know, it was kind of, you know, I grew up in an area where, you know, integrating and being around, you know, people of color and stuff like that, that was a norm for me. So I kind of maybe that made me a natural in society where I didn't see, you know, black or white and, you know, and that type of stuff. So it kind of when I reflect back on my growing up and my life, I'm kind of going, you know, you saw it from a different set of eyes than most people in America are seeing it, you know. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, that's kind of where I grew up. You know, there wasn't much there, mostly like I said, refineries and plants and places like that. So, I mean, people my age, when I was going back home to visit family and stuff, I'd run across a couple old buddies and people my age, which was back in my late 50s, and you know, I'll be 65 this year, you know, at the age of retirement, which I can collect my pension, which is there wonderful and all
there
that.
There you go.
And I would go back home and I would talk to some of my boys and say, you know, how's life? He goes, well, you know, I retired last year. I said, retired? You know, here I'm a guy who played in the NFL and made, you know, we made money. I you know, back in our day, I thought, man, how can you? And these guys all went into these refineries. They worked, you know, 9 to 5 or whatever it was, like shift work, they call it. You work a shift. It's 24 hours a day. These plants are operating. And these guys put a lot of money aside. You know, you live a simple life there and you get pension plans from your the big place you work for. So, you know, it's a culture where people are happy and they like life. You know, they don't have beautiful malls and they don't have, you know, a whole lot of restaurants to go out to, but it's simple. And, you know, and that's a good part of life. You know, it kind of, my roots are pretty strong and I'm a pretty humble person from knowing that kind of upbringing.
That's awesome. And I tell you what, AJ, it's interesting to hear you talk about the diversity of Reserve and how you feel like that kind of prepared you and this was just the norm to be around folks that didn't look like you.
Yeah.
And I know in sports, people come together in a locker room from all walks of life, from different parts of life. They look different and you kind of, any differences that you have, or if there's any issues, it gets set aside and we actually come together for one goal. And so you kind of got that not only from being an athlete, but to hear that somebody who grew up in the time that you did, but that was the norm, is really kind of refreshing, quite honestly, Juice, you know, when I listen to that, because oftentimes it's the opposite, right? A lot of people.
Well, that's true. I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, basically, but the thing is, you know, I think that, you know, even in the day when I played, you know, there probably was, you know, even in the locker room, there were probably some guys that kind of, you know, had a little bit of a racial maybe feeling inside their head, you know, black guys and white guys. Mm-hmm. And at that time we had, you know, and we had an Armenian, Garo Yepremian. I mean, you know, so, yep,
right.
You know, so it's kind of, you know, it just, it's natural. I, you know, like I said, I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, there is racism going on in our country. And
I think for us, I think the locker room that we grew up in, you know, it helps you understand other people and other people's cultures and where they're from and what they're all about. And I think that's a great way of bringing people together to just understand people. I know at Penn State, we talk about, and Joe always had the thing called the Great Experiment. And the Great Experiment was about, you know, I roomed my first year with a guy from Texas, a big white guy from Texas. And, you know, we had such different views on everything, music, food, everything about it was different. And, you know, at the beginning, we didn't get along. We even went to Joe about it. And Joe was like, figure it out. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the best things about a locker room, where you got guys come from all over the country that come together for a common goal, but you also get to learn each other and what they're all about and where they're from and their lifestyles and things like that. And you get a different appreciation for a lot of people that way.
But Juice, okay, so I you know, I'm probably a generation or so ahead of you, because I started school at college in 1973. So in Louisiana, I mean, you know, basically LSU, at the time when I entered school, I think there were only 3 black guys on the roster already. 3 out of, back in those days, we had 100, maybe 18 to 20. You know, you used to be able to have more people on your roster. We had, like nowadays, you only allowed maybe 10 walk-ons. We must have had 35, 40 walk-ons. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, back in those days, you know, yeah, there was, you know, no rules. You know, if you had a big bucket of money to spend, you know, those universities, you know, and it's still where the Power Five are still ruling everything. So, I mean, it was ruling them back in the 70s. They're still ruling them today. But my roommate was a black guy from across the river. You know, he grew up on the other side of the river from me. He was kind of, and I was kind of in awe when Coach McClendon called me up and said, you know, we're signing roommates and I'm going to sign you, you and Terry Rubisky to be roommates together. I guess he was checking on
Terry
my calls.
Terry Rubisky. Wow. Yeah.
That was a roommate, huh?
Yeah. So in other words, maybe he was checking my pulse. You know, maybe he said, let me call the white kid first, you know, and see, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they you know, that was probably a tough thing to make a decision on. You know, I mean, you look back. I'm talking the 70s. You yep. probably have a lot of young people listening to your podcast going, oh, listen to that big old white man racist. You know, I mean, you know, I'm just talking from my heart and telling you the truth.
Sure.
I mean, so in other words, I said, sure. You know, because actually, I was kind of honored to be Terry's roommate. Terry was basically the Bo Jackson of the day. You know what I mean? He was probably the most sought after kid in high school to go to. Terry told me the stories about when he went to see Notre Dame, went to see Oklahoma, went to all these places. He said, if I would have visited Notre Dame, probably on a warm day. I might have went to school there. You know what I mean? You know, so, yeah. Cause you know, that's
do they have
awesome
warm days though? Is there a warm day?
Well, I mean, you know, you
got a couple back in Indiana.
Back in our day, recruiting only happened like during football season. You know, nowadays they bring these kids in the springtime, and they've stretched the envelope as much as they can. So you know, that was a good experience. You know, Terry was kind of interesting guy. You know, he came to school and I showed up with two little duffel bags with jeans and t-shirts and some couple of sneakers and stuff. And he shows up with a wardrobe. I'm kind of going, So back in the day, they had ways to, kind of supplement your scholarship, I guess,
That's right.
That's what it sounds like for sure. Yeah, but they also knew the climate of reserve. I wonder if it was like, hey, if we put these two together, AJ can handle this, right? He, he's not going to be unfamiliar with being around a teammate.
Right.
And maybe you can set the tone for the rest of the team.
Yeah, because we roomed together the whole year, and and after it was over with, Terry and I both started as freshmen. So in other words, once you have a little bit of leverage with the team,
right?
They had about, I think, maybe 8 or 10 rooms in the whole dorm, the sports athletic dorm, for guys who wanted to live by themselves. Sometimes. Most of the times it was the guys who were like in pre-med and stuff. They wanted to study and stuff like that. But, Terry wanted his own room. And, I ended up rooming with my buddy, a guy that became my best man in my wedding, a kid from Florida who was a Greek. So I ended up, going from a brother to a Greek, to a different brother of a different color. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. So, of course, we talk about, you staying at home and playing for LSU, where you had obviously an awesome career. And then in 1977, the Dolphins selected the first round of the draft, 13th overall, which got me by 12 picks, I think that is. God damn, that's getting it done right there. What were your thoughts at that time, going from Louisiana to Miami? And, while I was fortunate enough to play for Coach, I played for a little bit different coach than you did. Tell us about those few years, with Coach Shula right after, only a few years after the perfect season. I mean, he was tough.
Yeah, well, the good thing would help me is that, I kind of was projected to be kind of like a second round draft pick and going into the draft. A couple teams, I had a good Senior Bowl. I played in Coach Shula. That's when the first time I met him, and played for him in the Senior Bowl. He worked the hell out of us. He was here. He is. It's an all-star game. And nowadays, I guess when you go to the Senior Bowl, these guys are kind of we don't want to work them too hard. They might want to go home, and say, hey, I'm opting out or something. So, back in those days, opting out wasn't a part of our vocabulary.
Right.
So I played for Coach Shula in that game. And when the game was over, he just congratulated me. I was a defensive player of the game. He kind of talked to me about how, he liked my work ethic. And when it came for draft day, I was – because a couple of teams had called me, after the Senior Bowl saying that, started bringing me in. Back in those days, they were bringing players in. Just, it wasn't like it is now, Juice. They bring in a dozen guys at a time. Back in those days, it was selectively, pick out some guys that they thought were number one picks. They wanted to bring in to get evaluated by their doctors. They wanted to bring you in to, speak with the staff and it's kind of what they do now, but more of a much, much, much higher degree where, you're meeting with these guys at the combine. So they didn't have combines, I guess, back in the day. So a couple teams were kind of going, we like everything about you, son. We like your work ethic. We like the way, you approach the game, your mind and stuff like that. So I was getting the idea that I might be a late round draft pick in the first round. The night before the draft, me and my boys, we went out partying because
about to get drafted.
As you should.
We were excited. So the phone rings at my apartment about they started the draft back in those days. I think at maybe 8 a.m., Eastern time. And it was 9 a.m., even if it was 11 a.m., I probably still been asleep. But the phone rings. My roommate answers the phone. It's for you. It's for you. So I go pick up the phone. And it's the Buffalo Bills. They're on the clock. They're telling me. They're saying that we're on the clock now, but we have a couple questions because they weren't one of the teams to bring me in and ask me any questions. They said there's word out that you're using Howard Slusher as your agent, and I remember Howard Slusher telling me all up to the draft. He says, AJ, he says, keep everything under the cuff. Just tell me you haven't picked an agent yet. For something, maybe the hangover made me say, yeah, I'm using Howard Slusher. And they said, okay, we're going to talk about it. We got a couple more minutes to make our decision, and we'll get back with you. So I hung up the phone and I was still kind of in a fog. And I tell my roommate, I said, that was the Buffalo Bills. They, you know, they think about taking me, you know, as their first pick. And I was kind of like, I didn't know Buffalo. I mean, I don't even think there wasn't even Buffalo chicken wings back in those days. Yeah. I didn't know what
whatever you thought it was, you were right.
Yeah. You know, so the phone rings just about a minute or two later. And I'm kind of going, I guess we're going to Buffalo, guys. Y'all can come see me. And here it is. It was Bobby Bethard who was with the GM with the Dolphins. He said, this is Bobby Bethard from the Miami Dolphins. Coach Shula would like to talk to you. So, you know, so all of a sudden Coach Shula gets on the phone. You know, back in those nowadays, when you see the guy on ESPN talking,
right,
you kind of, you know, in our days, it was just a matter of just being hung over on your couch in a cheap old apartment building in Baton Rouge, you know, hearing Coach Shula saying, you know, we're glad to have you, you know, as a Dolphin. He says, when you come here to work, I just know you're going to work the way you worked for us at the Super, at the Senior Bowl, and let's get it done. You know, so that's the way it broke out. And then again, getting back to the main question, Juice, as you know, I run my mouth for a long time, so you might not get a chance to.
That's why we have you here, AJ. That's exactly why you're here.
You might not get a chance to, you know, answer many questions, but, you know, working for the man was a blessing. I mean, you know, it's kind of like I tell people all the time, you know, you don't have to love your boss to like him. I mean, you know, I mean, or you don't have to like him to love him. I guess that's right. The way to really say it, because, you know, a lot of people kind of like thought Coach Shula was, you know, he would rub you wrong, and but he knew how to produce a winning formula. That's, you know, that's kind of what everybody wants right now in life, just to have something that works, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think that is exactly what it was. And whatever happened with the Buffalo pick, what did they end up doing with that pick?
They took Philip Dokes.
Who?
Philip, if you Google him, I think he had one season or two seasons, okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, I was in another team that passed on me, and I found out later after talking to him was Hank Stram. Hank Stram was the head coach of the Saints. And the Saints took another defensive end. That year, there was like seven defensive ends taken in the first round, but maybe that's normal. I think defensive ends are kind of one of the premium positions in the draft, usually every year, right?
I mean, yeah, for sure.
Right? Yeah. So there was like seven of us taken. But because my wife actually was a sorority sister of Hank Stram's daughter, and
and you had an end right there, and he didn't pull the trigger.
No. Yeah, exactly. But you know what he said though? He said when I was in Kansas City, I drafted a guy in the first round who went to Kansas, like a hometown hero. And he said it didn't work out. He says, I didn't want to take that chance again. You know what I mean?
He didn't want to keep you home. That's great. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Huh?
Listen, I don't know who's.
But it could ruin you. I mean, you know, you go home to mama eating dinner all the time, you know, and having your boys, you know.
But staying home isn't always there's something really cool about it, but it's not always a good thing. Some guys need to get away.
Tickets, man. Tickets. Tickets are the biggest problem, man. Too. You know, I mean, you got to get 40 tickets at your high school.
Yeah, 40 tickets at $12 a piece, man. Right. You know?
We wish we could get that deal now. Well, I don't know who screwed up in Buffalo, but I'm glad they did, and I'm sure you are as well. So now listen, we did a little research, AJ, before we got started here. One of our sources, and maybe you can figure out who it was, but one of our sources said we need to ask you about your early eating habits, that your eating habits when you got to the Dolphins maybe weren't what they needed to be.
Well, no, my eating habits are still picky, but they're not as picky as they were. Okay. I mean, so you're probably getting guys who talk to the cheese story. I'm sorry, somebody told you about a cheese story, right? So I never liked cheese growing up. Okay, for some reason, I just didn't like cheese. My mother, you know, she didn't if she'd have made lasagna or something being a French lady, Cajun lady, you know, we didn't have, you know, we might have had spaghetti and meatballs once a month, maybe. You know, I mean, that was kind of our Italian. Let's throw that Italian dish into the mix, you know. So there was no lasagna, there was no chicken parmesan. There's not many French dishes that come with cheese. Okay, so it just that answers it, you know. So I remember we were Bo and I and Baumhard, we used to live at a little motel from hell, I guess we call it. We found this little motel that kind of rented out these efficiency apartments, and you know, we all rented them there, you know. So We would drive together to practice, and we'd pull into McDonald's, and I remember I told them, I want two. I said, tell them no cheese, you know, no cheese, you know. So, you know, we get these and we get these, everybody's opening up the bag. I kind of go, where's the ones with no cheese? You know, there was, and they all had cheese on them. You know, like, oh, I said, man, turn this damn car back around. You know what I mean? So we head back there. And to this day, Bo kind of goes, that little girl was probably 18 years old trying to make, you know, make a few bucks, you know, and you just kind of chewed her ear off. You know what I mean? and then some more food stories are, I mean, I got a bunch of those food stories, you know, and then as we get going on road trips, I don't know if much of this goes on, but the veterans, there's always be like a core of veterans that would want to go out to these nice restaurants when we were traveling, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they invite me, they invite Bo, you know, sometimes it'd be like, you know, maybe two or three of the young guys would go with like seven or eight of the older guys. But I remember this one time I went with a group of guys to a nice Italian restaurant in Cleveland. It was, I don't remember the name of it, but it was supposed to be one of the finer dining places in Cleveland.
What was it, Juice? That's your hometown.
When I was in Cleveland, I was not going to any fine dining restaurants in Cleveland. I promise you that.
I love it.
So, I mean, you know, in my eyes, it was fine dining, but today it might just be the regular place I'll go eat.
Ponderosa.
Pizza Hut. Yeah. I think they call it Pizza Hut.
No. Okay, so the story is that, you know, they come to the table, you know, what would you like to drink? Guys are ordering beers, you know, some waters and whatever it may be. Then the guy says, can I tell you about our specials tonight? You know what I mean? So the guy came up with some kind of, he was talking about this, you know, we're making a veal Parmesan, you know, we have, you know, but we were doing a little differently tonight. Then he talks about this pork dish, you know, and then he talks about this fish dish. So he comes around to me for my opportunity to make an order. And I said, I'll have pork Parmesan. And the guy and everybody, AJ, there's no pork Parmesan in the menu. I kind of go, wait a second. I heard him talk about this Parmesan dish. And I heard him talk about this pork dish. So I want to make pork Parmesan. And I told the guy, I said, my mom can do it. I know damn well. If your chef can't do it, you need to close this place down. You know what I'm saying? And listen, and about 2 or 3 weeks, swear to God, you guys, about 2 or 3 weeks later, I go to this little diner. You know, this is before I was married. You know, because I didn't get married until my third year. All this happened in my first and second year. I go to this little diner one day to have lunch on our off day. And they had pork chop Parmesan on the menu. I wish they had cell phones back then. Yeah. I'd have been tweeting and everything and telling all my boys, pork chop Parmesan today, boys. Come
here's
have
a damn
some.
Pork chop Parmesan. So what did you end up getting in Cleveland?
Hell, I don't know. I just remember I didn't get that pork chop Parmesan. Yeah, I probably ended up getting the veal Parmesan, whatever it was. You know, just that, you know, and even, you know, I mean, I got another one if you want to hear it, but I can't.
Yeah, man.
You
know, fire away.
Huh?
Absolutely.
So one time we were in San Francisco, and you know, San Francisco, their culture there is they got a big Asian culture, obviously, right? So we go to a Chinese restaurant, and I never had Chinese food in my life, ever, never in my life.
Really?
You know? Swear to God, never, you know, I didn't eat my first pizza until I came to you know, I never had pizza in my life. You know what I mean? You know, so.
Wow.
I mean, so we're in San Francisco and we're ordering these foods and I'm looking at the menu and I'm trying to read all the things and I'm kind of going, what's in this, you know, chicken, whatever it was kind of dish. I said, he said, well, the guy's telling us, you know, what kind of sauce it came with. And it came with snow peas. And I never heard of a snow pea in my life, you know, but I figured peas are okay. And he named the bean sprouts. And he said, bamboo shoots. I said, I'm not eating no damn wood. You know? You know, because as a kid, I grew up in the country and bamboo grew everywhere. You know, people used to use bamboo. You know, when I was growing up, people used to turn a bamboo into like a little fishing rod. You go fishing in the lake,
right?
With a cane pole, they call it. You know, like
cane pole,
you know,
fishing for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so I told the guy, I'm not eating no damn wood. You know what I mean? So that's another story that, you know, the guy's probably busted my chops with for years, you know.
Oh,
but,
God, that's great. That's great. Shit, Juice, I wouldn't be able to eat it. Italian food, Chinese food, right?
Right. You know, cheese.
That's all I eat.
That's right. That's right. That's
right. Listen, I eat it all now. The only things I don't eat right now, you're here. The only things I don't eat now, and Bo and them will tease me about it, I don't eat mushrooms. I don't eat olives. And I don't eat, what's the other one? And they say, why don't eat it? I said, I don't eat it because I don't like the feel in my mouth. And they kind of go, what do you mean by that? I said, well, one time I had a escargot, you know, I was with the guys at some fancy restaurant because I know damn well my mom didn't make escargot. So I had an escargot and I'm kind of, and it felt like that in my mouth. I'm kind of going, I don't want none of this stuff in my mouth anymore.
Right. That we're texture. Taking notes here.
You weren't so, feeling that texture, right?
Hey,
that
you won't
texture.
Believe it. I got a more modern day food story for you. Y'all want to hear that one? Or no?
Yes.
We got time? Okay, so last summer, we go to Alabama. My daughter lives up in Alabama. She married a young man who's an Auburn kid. You know, so we have the split. They have the split household, I guess what they call that, divided house, you know, LSU
yep, tied. For sure.
Because my daughter did go to LSU, my only, you know, only child to, you know, want to go back home and go back to our home to go to school. So it's an Auburn Tiger married to an LSU Tiger, but it was his grandmother's 80th birthday. We rented two beautiful houses on Dolphin Island, which is kind of like, it's kind of like maybe Sanibel version in Alabama. It's kind of like that, you know, where, you know, nice, you know, homes lifted off the water. So we rented a couple homes, and my son-in-law, his uncle, married a woman from Cambodia. So it was her night to cook. So, you know, she cooked this steamed fish. We had these big, beautiful red snappers, and she cooked this steamed fish. Oh, man, to die for, okay? But the thing is that when they put them on the table, you know, everybody was, it was a whole fish, Juice, if you can imagine. Just mm-hmm. People are just taking big chunks with yeah. their fork, big piece of fish on your plate. You know, it wasn't like some, oh, you can have this little filet, this filet. Everybody just taking a big old chunk out of there, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you know, we're having a big family dinner, having a great time, about eight of us, you know. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting next to Carrie. You know, I don't know what her name is, but we call her Carrie. I mean, you know, she's you're a wonderful girl, man. You know, just she loves me, you know, because I'm kind of like. She
well, how'd you come up with Carrie? You don't know what her name is? Like,
no, that's what they call her. I don't know what her name is.
Okay.
her name is
probably
Carrie. Yeah, but she probably has a Cambodian name. You know what I'm saying?
You
know,
I mean, you
know. So Carrie. You know, I'm sitting next to her because we used to get along because, you know, we kind of like, it's almost like her roots are like mine. She came from a poor part of the, you know, world, Cambodia, a city that where people didn't have running water and, you know, and things like that. You know, we talked and, you know, I learned her culture a little bit. And this isn't the first time I'm around. I'm around her, you know, like maybe for the eighth or tenth time. I mean, it's not like, you know, the first time we met each other. So she makes a steamed fish and all of a sudden she's got something on her plate. And my wife, Frances, kind of goes, "What is that, Carrie?" She goes, "Oh, that's the eye, you know?" So she shows, she said, "This is a delicacy, you know?" And I'm kind of going, "Fish eye?" And right then and there, I started getting shamed. You know, my daughter, my son-in-law, her in-laws, AJ, eat it. You know, and they all started shaming me. AJ,
I'm tapping out. I'm sorry, fellas.
So I took the fish. Yeah.
Did you eat it?
I took the fish. Well, you ain't gonna, nobody's gonna call me out, and I'm not gonna, you know.
But you won't eat cheese, and you'll eat a fish eye.
I get it, okay. But the thing is that, you know, I've built up this thing about me that, you know, I'll take any challenge. You know what I mean? You know,
right. I love it.
And you know, I'm not gonna go. I'm not gonna high wire somewhere. I'm not gonna do that. You know what I mean? I'm not
right.
You know. But so I ate the fish eye, and I kind of like the first thing went in my mind was escargot,
mushrooms on it.
Add it to the list, right?
So it was just, people were loving it. I'm kind of going, y'all were having a good time making me feel like I ain't worth it. You know what I mean? So it turned out to be kind of a goofy, crazy story that day.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
I had enough.
Thank you.
There's more of this, but I don't know.
You know what, AJ?
Here's a story that involves Coach Shula. In food, okay, we got time for that one too.
Yeah,
right?
We got all
we got
the time.
Plenty time.
So podcast.
So we go to San Diego. I'm trying to think. It was the year we were undefeated. So that was that might have been Danny's second year or something like that.
The 84. You
know, we went to the Super Bowl that year. Okay, so we go to San Diego. We're undefeated, and you know, there was the hype because there was only like four games left in the season. So I guess the hype started. You know, like, you know, Coach Shula probably was feeling the hype more than us because we weren't part of the 17-0 team. And, you know, we were talking about the undefeated season, and we kind of had that in the back of our minds, you know, man, you know, we can do this twice, you know, and, you know, just kind of not as so we go to San Diego, we go into overtime, you know, we were probably, I don't know, maybe a touchdown favorite or something like that. You know, it wasn't like the team that we should go there and blow out. You know, it was a good game. You know, it was, we played real football back and forth. They took the lead. We took the lead. They tied the game, and then we were in a defense. Like, I was a defensive signal caller, and then, you know, there were certain things that I had the ability to adjust out of when I communicated with the safety, just like they do nowadays. I mean, you know, now the communication level has got to be insane. When I watch the game played today, I'm kind of going, man, I don't know how these guys are making all these adjustments, you know? So we make an adjustment, And the guy that I was making the adjustment with didn't understand that I changed it from backer support to safety support. So in other words, that would just mean that, you know, he had the inside gap and I had the outside gap. So when I went to safety support, I kind of went on a head up position with the tight end because, you know, I knew I was probably going to get double teamed because a lot of times, you know, they had a tendency to run that little cross motion and then chip on the linebacker. So I figured I'd take up two guys and then free up the outside. So the guy bounces it out and the safety thought it was still backer support. So he hit the inside hole and then he went for a touchdown to beat us. And then after the game in the shower, you know, I'm taking a shower and Coach Shula kind of looked at me and kind of gave me hell. You know, back in those days, the coaches jumped in the shower with the players. I don't know what they're doing nowadays. They may have their own private sections of the locker room. But, you know, back in those days, the coaches would jump in the showers with the players. So Coach Hula's, you know, ripping me. And, you know, I'm kind of going, damn it. You know, I said, I made the correction. So whatever it was, you know, him and I just kind of left the shower on bad terms. Okay. So my mom and dad came in town for a home game the next week. Because they would always like to come in late in the year, you know, like kind of like towards the holidays, right? So my mom makes this big old pot of chicken and andouille gumbo. And my mother had been doing that for years because I'm already now in my sixth or seventh year. And that was like AJ's mom. When she comes in town, boy, everybody in the locker room knew they had a little bowl of gumbo coming their way. So my mom made gumbo and I brought it to camp and I was still kind of in Jules and I was still kind of, you know, at odds a little bit, you know, he just ripped my butt, you know, in the shower in front of everybody, you know, and telling me, you know, all he wants to do is be undefeated again. I'm kind of running that through my head.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Still in his head.
Yeah.
But you guys were 11-0 going into that game.
Yeah, okay. Geez. So this is like,
I just looked at 1984, 11-0.
This is like, you know, this is like 3 days later, you know, and I'm still not talking to him, you know I mean? I'm only talking to him professionally. Yes, sir. Okay. You know, before it used to be, I'd be BSing with him walking to the field, you know, all this. So we're having gumbo and Coach Shula comes up to me and says, so I don't get to have any gumbo this time. Right. You know, because he had heard from the other coaches, I was telling Coach Scary, who was my line coach, Coach Arnsberger, the defense. I said, my mom got a big pot of gumbo. Make sure you get your bowl full. You know, so that kind of he broke the ice when he said, ah, so I don't get no more gumbo, right? You know,
he wanted that gumbo.
He did. You know, I mean, I kind of go, now, Coach, come on, get yourself a bowl. So then we started talking that he kind of broke the ice by saying that, you know, kind of on an off work kind of subject, right?
Yeah, they say, well, food always brings people together, right? No matter what, especially when you got something like that. Your mom knew the remedy. Moms always know the remedy, don't they, man? The healing power healed that relationship real quick, didn't she?
And it's true, though, because, you know, I noticed that with even my children, right? My children, you know, their friends, you know, we had an open house. I mean, you know, anybody can come to my house and my boys would always like be proud of their mom, you know, that she makes the best gumbo in America. You know what I mean? Like, you know, come have it, you know, and she would make all these dishes that were like, you know, big pot roast, you know, and kids would always love to come to our house. You know, first of all, I mean, they got a clown like me entertaining them for one thing, you know, because
eating eyeballs. You know, he said, you got clown like you eating eyeballs. I mean, it's already.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, they've got the best of both. They got their best friend's mom who makes the best meals as possible. Then their dad, don't shut up. You don't quit telling stories. That's what life's supposed to be. You know, just having love and sharing love and having and fellowship. You know,
absolutely.
That's right. AJ, you know, I want to go back to your rookie year real quick. Because you certainly lived up to your first round expectations, 83 tackles. And if the stat was then being taken, you know, 7 sacks, if they would have done it back then, of course, you were named NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. You know, why did it seem to come so easy for you? And what were your greatest memories of your rookie year as a Dolphin?
I guess, you know, I went in there with like a feeling like, you know, I'm not intimidated by any of this stuff. I mean, I went in there with the attitude. Because I was a holdout. First of all, I got represented by Howard Slusher. Okay. First of all, Howard Slusher, as I mentioned earlier about the Buffalo Bills situation, I was a 27-day holdout. And back in those days, you were the devil. I mean, you know, I used to get intimidating phone calls all the time from, you know, a guy from the media relations department called me up. Oh, we'd like to do a story on you. Everybody was always trying to, when are you coming in? When are you signing and everything like that? So I was back home busting my hump. And maybe Coach Shula felt like I was sitting back at home, you know, just pouting why I can't get this deal done. But I was busting my hump. So I come in, and when I signed, the first thing they told me was make sure you know your LSU fight song, because, you know, you're coming in late. These guys are pissed at you for damn sure. You know, we've been working for 27 days already. So I'm on the plane just go fighting tigers. You know, I'm just trying to sing it to myself. People are sitting next to me. So I get into the facility at St. Thomas, and Coach Shula says, don't eat too much because you got work to do. So I took it that, you know, I didn't know it was going to be after my dinner. So, you know, I went in there, you know, I kind of had a little bit to eat. I sang my fight song for the guys. And as I was walking out, you know, one of the guys in the equipment room said, you know, you need to get over to the facility, to the locker room. And, you know, coach wants you to go practice a little bit. So he takes me along with like three or four offensive linemen that are, I mean, they were free agents. You know, he's not taking some guy who's an all pro. You know, he took the free agent guys, maybe some low round draft picks who were offensive centers and guards and whatever it was. There was four of them. And we go out there. I'm pumped. I mean, I'm ready to go. And I tool these guys. I mean, you know, like, you know, we're doing pass protection, 2-on-1 drills. And Shula's just like wishing I'd be getting my ass whooped probably. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Just to prove to me that, you know, and he comes up. He said, that was some good work. He says, I'm gonna start you on Saturday.
Wow!
You know? And so that's, you know, I mean, So I mean, I started in my first it was a preseason game. You know, still had a couple preseason. I started, you know, it was lights out. I played with a chip on my shoulder. The chip on your shoulder. I just played like you can't beat me. I mean, that's right. You know, that's just the way you have to have. You have to have that kind of mindset. You're gonna get beat. I mean, nobody is unbeatable. But if you play with that mindset, you know, you're gonna be successful most of the time. That's just the way I feel. You know.
Well, you clearly had a hell of a rookie year, as Drew said, NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. A lot of accolades that year. But one of the highlights of that 77 season came on Thanksgiving Day. And you guys traveled to St. Louis and just kicked their ass. I think Greasy threw 6 touchdowns, which is not a typical Bob Greasy game. You guys blow them out 55-14. So the defense obviously had a great day as well. But from what I understand, something went down between you and Conrad Dobler, the Pro Bowl guard for the Cardinals.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, like I tell you about those little boys coming over to the house and eating mom's good food and listening to pop's old stories. I tell people to this day, I'm the initial trash talker of the NFL.
That's what I like to hear.
Huh? I said, you know, that's the. I remember going earlier in that season. We were playing the Patriots, and they had John Hanna and Leon Gray, two perennial All-Pro guys. And that was in the time when the Dolphins were controlling the AFC East. But you know, we were in a rebuilding season that year, and I go up against them, and they're both just tearing my ass. Okay, you know, and big Leon Gray kind of goes, "Hey, Rook." And as easy as you thought, right? Because, you know, going into that game, I had been having good games against, you know, everybody I played against, you know, and again, you know, probably trash talking, you know, it wasn't like it is nowadays, you know, where, you know, I was probably saying things like, hell, I can play this game, you know, I mean, those guys put on their shoes the same way I do or whatever, just things like that. So then getting, like going, maybe advancing it 5 or 6 weeks ahead towards Thanksgiving, we were playing up on Thanksgiving Day, and the sports writers had written us off. You know, we had a decent season, our rookie season, but they had said this is going to be the day that in St. Louis they're having fish for Thanksgiving, right? You know, the sports writers were writing us off, and you know, a lot of us on the team had a little chip on our shoulder because not giving us a chance to beat them. St. Louis at the time, I think, was considered the team to beat to make it to the NFC. You know, back in that, you know, they might have had a. You look at their record, I mean, at that time, they may have only had 1 or 2 losses, you know? So they were kind of one of the head. And we went up there and, you know, like I said, Greasy had the outstanding day. We were just shutting them down any way possible. We had a big day defensively. And as the game was going on, you know, Dobler would run his mouth. I would run my mouth. And, you know, and I was saying things like, you know, because at that time we had 5 rookies starting on defense. I kind of go, and I was kind of going, hey, old boy, you know, these kids are whipping y'all's ass, huh? I mean, you know, and just talking stupid. And it turned ugly. You know, Coach Shula saw it starting to happen. He goes, AJ, he says, you know, let's kind of keep this under control. So, you know, the next series we'd go in there was some pushing and shoving going on. And finally, Shula took me out of the game.
Really?
He took me out of the game, and he put in a guy named Wally Pursuit, who was an offensive guard. But Wally must have been, you know, on the sideline begging to go play. So he gets in the game, and he was more crazier than I was. So he gets in there, And then the brawl starts. Okay, I'm not even on the field. Okay, I'm on the sideline. The bench is clear. I'm still on the sideline. So all of a sudden, we come back to work on Tuesday for Players Day, and Coach Shula starts reading. This is disgraceful. You know, this is the most fines ever issued by the NFL. You know, on any given day or something like that. So Coach Shula starts going. He starts naming these guys. 250. You know what I mean? Like nowadays, the fine would be like 15,000 or something.
Right, right, right.
250. You 250. 175. He starts naming them, and my name don't get called. And all of a sudden, Larry Little goes, "What the hell? AJ started all this stuff." And Coach goes, "But he didn't leave the sideline."
There it is.
You know, and so that's kind of a crazy story. But he's the guy that's made all this stuff happen, and he's on the sideline. Not paying a dollar, you know. These guys are all coming. Damn it, rookie, it's coming out of your pocket some way or another, you know.
Oh man.
But you can imagine $250, man. You know, that was about a half of a game check for some of those guys.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, right? It's all relative, right, AJ?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. You know, at this point, man, you're such a big fixture on that Dolphin defense, man. Of course, you know, at that time, the defense itself was making a huge name for itself. Talk about the Killer Bees. And I've always wondered, man, how guys like yourself, who was so important on that defense, felt about, you know, being kind of on the outside looking in when it came to Killer Bees and when it came to that nickname and maybe even some of the endorsements they got.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, I think we may have had seven guys with B. I'm not sure.
It was a lot.
I'm going to see if I got a Killer B post in here somewhere. I can count them up.
I don't know because it's all AJ Douay stuff back there. Yeah, that's the whole problem.
I got a little bit of memories of my teammates.
Might be in the bottom drawer or something in there.
Yeah. We'll look for it on the next
Francis
show.
Francis didn't go that route. She didn't go that route.
No, so I always told that people kind of go, where does the D fit in with all the Bs? Like, I kind of go, the Bs.
The Bs.
The Bs.
I think that's how they make up for you costing them on that fine, that you got out of any of those promotional opportunities there.
What you mean, the posters and stuff like that?
Right.
I think each guy made about $200. If I'd have been on the poster, we each made $1,000. I thought
they missed out.
They needed to put you on.
They
there.
Missed out.
Yeah, I said it's the bees. The bees.
The bees. That's fantastic. Well, speaking of the bees, they obviously came into prominence in the '82 season. I can't imagine that you have done an interview over the last 40 years where this hasn't come up. And while we don't focus on X's and O's as much, we can't talk to AJ Douay without talking about January 23rd, 1983. New York Jets come down here in the Orange Bowl, AFC Championship game, and you just go off, right? Three interceptions, one you take back for a touchdown. And there's so many iconic players in the history of this team, but not everybody has moments like that. And you have one of those moments, and I see it over your right shoulder over there. You had one of those moments that just is immortalized in Dolphins history. Talk about that a little bit, AJ. But also, as much as it's been talked about, is there anything that we don't know? Is there anything that happened that day that maybe doesn't get talked about that might be interesting?
I think all of it's been, you know, brought. But speaking of that poster, let me just tell you about that. That poster came in a roll-up tube, you know, like a photo tube rolled up from no address, no name, anything. I mean, I'd love to find out. Maybe the guy who drew that will see it. I never was able to thank anybody. I mean, it just came in a poster.
Just anonymous poster that was sent to you. It's unbelievable.
I mean, and there's no, like, you know, like somebody's signature on it. That's crazy. I mean, I don't know if you can see that is like, it's almost as good as just the picture itself. I mean, you know, this guy
very
was,
cool,
you know, and it's kind of like watercolor, you know, and man, I was like going, this is amazing. So, but getting back to that game. So, I mean, I don't think there was anything that went on that day. I know that people complained about the field being saturated. I don't know if, you know, if the story was ever told, but a guy who I met years and years later told me that his uncle worked at for the city of Miami, and they were the ones who ran the Orange Bowl. And back in the day, the Dolphins had AstroTurf. They had AstroTurf, right? And AstroTurf changed the it actually changed the elevation of the field, because back in the day, you know, this goes back a long time ago, fields had a little bit of a hunchback. It was like a little slight you know, from the sideline to the
crown. You
might have
crown.
It wasn't much, maybe 7 to 8 inches, right? Maybe something like that.
Yep.
And when they went to AstroTurf, they made everything flat. So you want the flat playing field. And I assume that, you know, players, they gotten used to it. And there was a thing called prescription athletic turf, which was real grass built over an irrigation system where, you know, they had drainage pumps and all that. And the rain over that period caused the pumps to overwork and they started shutting down. I mean, it was like a monsoon for at least 5 or 6 days. I mean, I remember Coach Shula having to change some of our practice schedules based on what time he thought the heaviest rains would come in. So there were some times we'd come in the morning and we'd go right to the practice field and watch film and do stuff later. And so basically the field obviously had a big impact on that game. And it wasn't Coach Shula's fault. Coach Shula wasn't the guy who was supposed to call up, you know, the city of Miami and say, oh, the field's covered, you know, or anything like that, you know. So people, let's put that to rest. You know, Coach Shula had nothing to do with that. But, you know, on that day, you know, I changed my cleats for one thing. I do know that we went out for warmups and I was, you know, I didn't have good footing. And so when we came back in, you know, Bobby Monica, who was our equipment manager at the time, you know, he had a bag, you know, full of these extra long cleats, you know, which are
right.
When you have cleats that long in your cleat and you try and go on regular grass, you're going to trip all over yourself, you know, because they just when the field is moist as it is and soft and soggy, it is, it just kind of help you get into where you can get some traction. So I think that helped me a lot in terms of my footing because I didn't, you know, receivers were slipping and falling and most of us were just kind of like, you know, being able to maintain our footing and stay on our feet. But the plays itself were just, you know, three plays, just being in the right place at the right time, making the, you know, the right decisions. The quarterback didn't have a very good day, to be honest with you. He threw, when I tell people, I said, the first interception was pretty much, I was beat for probably, we were in man coverage and the fullback ran an option route on me, and which means it's, you know, in human being feeling or fans, it's just the option means that he has the option to go against the defender and do what he thinks.
Go anywhere, right?
Yeah. So he runs a little option route on me, which is, you know, it's like street ball, you know, just go beat him however you can, right? So he beats me by at least, I'm like three steps behind the guy, and he throws the pass where the guy tries to make a backhanded catch.
Oh,
and
man.
And it tips the ball into the air, and I'm kind of like trailing him by three steps going, thank you. You know,
thank you, Richard Todd. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And another one was, we were in, the second one was we were in a man coverage with help. So the safety was on top of the tight end, and I was underneath coverage. And I guess Richard didn't see me because the safety was playing off pretty far. And he kind of goes, man, you know, why is he giving the tight end so much room? But I was kind of underneath it. So I guess he didn't want to overthrow him where the safety can come up and nail him. So he threw a little underneath pass, and it was underneath enough for me to intercept that one. So it was another bad mistake by Richard. On the third one was they ran a little swing pass. And all the times that Coach Mike Scary, our Mo Scary, taught me how to protect my feet, it paid off its best because the guy went to cut me. I played the technique correct. You know, kind of use my hands to protect myself. And as the ball was in the air, I was coming off the chop block, and it was, you know, he was throwing to Bruce Harper, which I think that maybe back in those days he was probably the shortest NFL player. He might have been like a equivalent of who's the little, like the Akeem,
Jakeem,
right?
Grant.
Yeah, Jakeem Grant. You know, yeah. Five, whatever, it's 5'8" and a half. What is Jakeem? I don't know. He's probably.
I don't know if he's even that.
Okay. So, you know, he was throwing a little dink pass to the running back out of the backfield, and I batted up in the air and take it and go home.
That
was it, baby. And then we were ready. And then I had another controversial Coach Shula story the next day. You know what I mean? Where,
because of the water?
No, not because of the water, because we're preparing to go to the Super Bowl because that was a strike shortened season. So we didn't have 2 weeks to prepare. We played the next week, right?
Right.
And it was kind of like a quick turnaround. And I remember Coach Shula was telling us we're doing this, that, how to pack and all this kind of stuff. And I, any questions? I said, Coach, are they going to serve us breakfast on the plane?
You know? Always comes back to food with AJ.
Yeah. Boy, was he pissed, you know? Yeah.
Did you have to bring the gumbo in again to chill them out before we got to the Super Bowl?
No, I brought it in. My mom made it every year for them, man. You know, she made it for her number one son, but you know, I mean, but we always shared it, you know, shared the love, you know, enjoyed people having a chance to kind of see what I had to eat most of my life, all that good stuff. Actually, I had a fish fry at my house the other day. You know, it turned out pretty good.
What?
I had a recently? Fry. Yeah.
I mean, hey, damn. I mean, we're on the advisory board. AJ, we're on the advisory board together, man. Where's that invite at, bro?
Well, I didn't know how good it was going to turn out. You know what I mean? And I told that to my wife. I said, babe, I said, the only thing different about us is that when I was having fish fries as a kid, we'd always do it out in the yard under the tree. You know what I mean? You know, so right. Here I am having an indoor fish fry.
Indoor fish fry.
The house smelled so bad. You know?
I bet. That one probably sticks.
And it's only two of us. You know, like here I am having a fish fry. Like everybody's over, you know? And she says, well, it's a good thing. We know it's good, so we can do it next time the family comes
over. You can
do it
again, and OJ can get that
I said, but I don't know if I want to fry a fish for a half hour. You know what I mean? I just want to make one batch.
One big old batch.
One batch, you know?
That's right.
When you have a fish fry juice, you know, you can be cooking fish for 2 hours.
You're the only one. You don't get to enjoy anything. You're just sitting there cooking the whole time. Yeah, everybody else is grubbing, and eating and drinking.
And I always say, I said, the ones who get the last batch is going to be the best one. That grease is good and tasty right now.
So got all kind of crumbs in it and everything.
Yeah,
All the flavors
exactly.
in it.
Exactly. Oh, too boy.
Funny. Too funny. Well, listen, so after that iconic performance, AJ, you play two more seasons, including your final year. You make your first Pro Bowl, ever, which is crazy to me, but you make your first Pro Bowl ever in 1984, and then you retire. And I know, you know, the reasons why you retired, and I know there were some surgeries and some injuries, and those things have been talked about. But I want to focus more on what you did afterwards, because I jumped on IMDb.com. I got on the internet, and I see you've got a little television and movie resume in there. So I want to know how you got into all that. And I want to know, what is the greatest acting role of AJ Douay's career? Is it Baby in The Opponent? Is it the Cleveland linebacker and Everybody's All-American? Or my personal favorite, Hammer from Miami Vice?
Yeah, it's definitely Miami Vice Hammer. Because to this day, even my kids, they love, because they've seen it, they kind of go, Dad, where's your damn comb? Because you know, I had a couple of speaking parts in that thing, but it was me. I was the head of the they call it, I guess, the Aryan Sun, whatever, you know, Aryan Sons.
Yeah,
right.
Something,
you know,
horrible.
You know, they had them gangs inside the prison. I was the leader of the Aryan Sons, right? And all of a sudden, I get back to my cell, and John Corker. I think he maybe have been deceased, but John Corker was in it too. It was me, John Corker, and Jim Kick. We were the three NFL guys that were picked for that particular episode. How they got us and found us, I don't know. We were all out of football at the time, and probably we all looked good. Maybe that was it, you know. So here I am with like tattoos. They were putting tattoos on me with the ink. You know what I mean? So I had tattoos on my neck, and you know, and people kind of go, you look like a little schoolboy. I mean, you know, that was one of my nicknames. You know, that was one of my nicknames I had from the guys. They call me schoolboy.
Yeah, that baby face.
Yeah. No. Schoolboy is because I didn't break the rules. That's why. You know, I was one of the guys that, you know, even though I was a rebel, I was a rebel with a cause, I guess. You know what I mean? You know, so I didn't break in many rules. And they used to always, you know, guys wanted to jump the wall, as they call it, and go out after curfew and drink. I said, nah, I'm not doing that stuff. You know, I like having a good time at partying. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, there were times to do it and times not to do it. But, you know, that probably episode of Miami Vice is probably the one that I like the most, just because it still brings back, you know, some fun and laughter, you know, amongst my family and friends, you know.
That's great.
That's pretty awesome. Now, AJ, you know, we talked a little bit about our beautiful wives, you know, both me and Name Francis. And I understand, like, in May, you celebrated your 40th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, man.
I'm sitting here, I've been with my wife for 15 years. We've only been married for a couple. And apparently I've got a long way to go. You got to tell us, and a lot of these listeners out here, what is the secret to 40 years? You know, I mean, that's no joke, man. How do you get to 40 years with, you know, with so much bliss and so much love, man?
You know, it's obviously, you know, love is the main ingredient. You know, you got to really love the person you're with. I mean, you know, and the thing is that there's going to be fights along the way. You know, there's going to be battles. You know, there's going to be some battle scars. A lot of times it's just, it could be something that just kind of goes and comes quickly over a glass of wine, maybe. You know, sometimes it might be, you know, 2 days living in the house, walking past each other like you don't know each other. I mean, you know, and just kind of like just letting, you know, let the ashes settle, you know, just and all of a sudden one of us just breaks the mold, like with me and Shula. You know, we didn't talk for those couple of days, but when he said, I don't get any gumbo. You know what
right,
I mean?
Like,
you know, something breaks the ice, you know? So, you know, something just breaks the ice, and it's just a matter of being patient. You know, my wife is as patient as can be, you know, I'm not the most patient person in the world, but her patience is probably unbelievable. I mean, I, you know, and basically it's amazing how you see your children. You know, when I look back at my children, I'm kind of going, damn, that's so much like his mother, but then that's so much like me, you know, each one of them, you know, so obviously, absolutely. You know, the good Lord put together a good gumbo there. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. Years,
you know, and the recipe just gets better and better. Okay.
I love it.
I mean, just, you know, I don't know, man, you know, I, you know, God bless you and Francis, you know, that, you know, for 40 years for you though, you know, you started at a later age, you know,
that's what started the conversation this morning.
For me,
I think my wife's going to be, she's going to be changing my diaper by then, I think.
Oh boy. I hope they got something new in mind, because I don't know if I want to do that.
that may not be what you're looking for. Well, look, AJ, we're going to get you out of here in a second. But I wanted to ask you this. Clearly, throughout this interview, we've talked about how competitive you are, whether it's Fish Eyeballs or Conrad Dobler. There's a competitive nature there in you. But we talked to one of our favorites here in the tank, Stu Weinstein, right? The great Dolphin security man. And Stu told us that you're also competitive on the softball field, even if it's a charity game, and that an umpire may have gotten under your skin one time.
Yeah, that's kind of a touchy story. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, I'll tell you from start to finish. So we were, we were going to play at, I'm not sure the name of the, it's a baseball stadium in Miami where a minor league baseball team played back in that time. I don't know. But, you know, we were there to play and raise money for a fireman or a cop that had been injured. And, you know, we did a bunch of that kind of stuff in the day, you know, played for benefits and for mm-hmm. For people trying to, you know, raise some money sure. and things like that. So we're out there, you know, that would be considered left field, you know, kind of like a bullpen area. We were just gooping around, warming up, throwing. And I'm sitting there talking to, because the game is tied in like the eighth inning. We got there around the eighth inning or something like that, right? So the game is tied, you know, in the eighth inning, and there's a guy in the bullpen, and I'm kind of going, damn, I hope somebody can score a run, man, so get this game over with, you know?
We don't need extra innings.
Yeah, so this may be extra innings, and sure enough, it went into extra innings. So they're playing like the 10th inning, you know. Now they're fixing to go into the 11th inning, and I'm kind of going. And I tell the guy, I said, "You guys draw a pretty good crowd here." And he kind of goes, "These people aren't here to see us; they're here to see you guys." He said, "You know, we don't get like 18 to 20 people to come to these games." So I'm kind of going. First thing across my mind, they're here to see us. Well, we need to go bring them the show. So I take it upon myself to go to the because first of all, the guy also tells me, he says, we're playing these guys again tomorrow. I'm kind of going, perfect scenario. We can get them to postpone the game, start this, you know. So I run onto the field. I say, ump, I got to talk to you.
Oh, boy.
And all of a sudden, I was going to plead my case. These guys play again tomorrow. Let's call the game. They're here to see us. And this guy just kind of, just yelling at me. Where have you come from? Who are you? You know, because I'm just dressed. I don't have a player's uniform. I got like a I've got like a Miami Dolphins softball team.
Right.
I mean, he don't know who, you know. So we get into a pretty heated argument, you know, and exchange some words and come to find out, you know, the game ended. You know, maybe I set off some emotions with one of the players and they hit a double to run, you know. So whatever happened, the game ended and, you know, we got to play our softball game. But come to find out, the guy sues me personally for assault and battery. Well, I mean, you know, you're
you put hands on him, AJ?
No. He said assault and battery supposedly means that you put fear into somebody and maybe we bump chests or something. You know, like, yeah, okay, come on, man. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I was in court for 3 days.
Are you serious?
Wow. Yes. Yes. And here's the thing, though. So when I told this to Coach Shula that I got to go to court, I'm being sued. He immediately calls up, I guess, the front office. The front office gives me one of their attorneys that represents the Dolphins, right? So it was Bob Chevin. He was actually the attorney general of the state of Florida at one time in his career before he became, the, you know, the Dolphins. His law firm kind of represents the Dolphins. So his law firm, you know, I met with them, and he told me bring in my homeowner's insurance policy. So I brought it, and he kind of goes, he said, you're covered. Don't worry. Your homeowners are going to cover this for you. But, you know, he wanted to represent me. Here's the guy who was once the attorney general of the state of Florida. He wanted to represent me because when I told him my case, he goes, he says, we're not letting this fly. You know, he said, this is just all about publicity or just trying to strong arm me for some money, right? I mean, so like this guy was suing me for $100,000, which is a bunch of money back in the day.
$100,000?
Yeah. So, you know, about a day or two before the trial, he gets a letter from their letter saying the guy will settle for like $10,000. He said, but we're not doing this. He said, even though your insurance, your homeowner's insurance will pay for this, you know, we're just not gonna let this kind of stuff happen. You know what I mean? So I guess he was out to prove that, you know, you just can't come after these ball players. You know, in today's day and age, these guys don't have a chance. I mean, you know,
right.
People are coming after them for anything. I mean, you know what I mean? So, but then again, wow. You know, everybody's putting their stuff on social media. We got a picture of you doing what you just said you didn't do.
I mean, right. You know,
so maybe if there was social media back in those days, maybe there was a better case for the guy. But, you know, it was just his word against mine. You know, a few guys came in and testified. You know, people who saw it the way they saw it didn't see it where AJ really assaulted or battered the guy. You know, it was obviously just two grown men.
Yeah.
You know, and come to find out, we find out during the trial, the guy was actually, he had sparred with Muhammad Ali. The guy was he was kind of an amateur boxer who wanted to, you know, be a professional boxer. And he's actually sparred with one. And this guy was afraid of me. I mean, I was bigger than him. I mean, you know, he might have been 6'3", 210, where I was 6'4", 245. I mean, I was definitely bigger than him, but I think his right hook would have taking me down pretty quickly.
That's still the same weight class, I think, right there.
I was in the ring with the greatest, man. That's crazy. Well, maybe he's the guy who sent you that picture.
He was an artist as well, though. Yeah.
That was his olive branch. Well, AJ, man, this was a lot of fun. I know, man. Juice can't wait to the next fish fry, but it was really, really great having you in here, man. So,
Juice, one thing I ruined. I fried fish, I fried shrimp, and I fried scallops. Don't fried scallops is not a winner. You got to. Yeah.
It's that same texture, right?
Just keep it like my wife Frances said. She said, that's the last time we're frying scallops, you know? Because the best way to do them is just to sear them, you know, in a pan, you know, quick heat, you know, get that nice little glazed brown look on them, you know, after you sear them. Yeah. Don't fry scallops, you know?
Hey, AJ, and I love how she approached you with it. She didn't like say, this is awful, this is terrible. She said, next time, baby, just don't fry scallops, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you guys get along. Yeah.
That's how you make 40 years, Juice. Right, she couldn't come in his ass. Say, what the hell is this?
It's not what you say, it's how you say it, right? It's how you say it.
You know, Juice, here's the thing, though. Sometimes I'm in the kitchen, you know, and like, you know, getting in the way, and she kind of goes, do you want to do this, or I'm going to do it? No, I don't want nothing to do with it.
Right.
Yeah. You got it.
Yeah. So for me, the hard thing may be like, can you go? She loves it that she says, you know, I love to, because you love to go grocery shopping. She says, I hate, you know, she said, I'll do it, but I love the fact that you love to go grocery shopping. And like working at home, see, I've been working at home now for maybe about 7 or 8 years. So getting back to now COVID, I told her, I said, one time I said, babe, we need to do like our own podcast about, you know, how to make it happen. We've been doing this for 8 years, couple at home, man works from home. You know, I said, we can make some money doing this. And she said, no. and then one time she gave me, I don't know, Juice, you know, I don't know who follows her on Facebook, but like now I have this is my COVID haircut. Like I love it now. I got one 2 or 3 days ago. So we were out in the backyard cutting my hair, and I'm sitting there doing like a FaceTime, kind of like, yep, out in the yard getting my COVID-19 haircut, you know, just cutting it away. And Frances posted this on Facebook, and a bunch of, you know, friends of mine, which are also people that they kind of going, I'll be there 2 tomorrow, make sure you're
making appointments.
So, you know, it's
you guys need to do the podcast.
You do the podcast, you might have to download a 7th app, though.
Yeah, that's true. We might have to get another app on there for it. I love it. Well, somebody should talk to Jason Jenkins. This should be part of the Dolphins podcast
absolutely.
Network.
Right?
Frying absolutely. Fish and cutting hair with the Duays. I love right. it.
All right, man. We're done. I enjoyed it. I hope y'all get great. Some good. You may have to do a double release. We got so much information.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there. We might have to split it into two. We've done that before. But no, it was fantastic, AJ. Thank you so much for coming on. And you know, congratulations on 40 years of marriage. And I'm just looking over your shoulder there. And as a Dolphins fan, it's just great to have you on here and hearing these stories of things that we either read about or got to watch when we were younger. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. But now it's kind of like I'm enjoying, let me find my little, hold on. My little, this is my, people say this is my twin. Watch, hold on. Hold on. This is my little granddaughter.
Oh wow.
Sometimes my wife or my daughter will put pictures. Hold on. Yeah, this is my granddaughter. She'll be 2 in January, but like sometimes when my wife will post pictures of her or my daughter will, you know, they'll kind of go, damn it, that ain't AJ. I don't know who she is, you know. So
congratulations,
I hope you just grow up to be tough as your papa. You know what I mean? You know?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm feeling she might. Feeling she might.
All right, guys.
Thanks for diving in, AJ.
Yeah, man. Goodbye. God bless y'all. All right.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Woo! Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dolph fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank, it's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank, rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. That fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rapping with OJ and Seth when you dive up in that fish tank.